RPH with Sideshow. And today I am thrilled because I am a massive Eliza Hull fan, as anyone who listens to the show regularly knows. And we have Eliza Hull with us. She is a musician, a writer, a disability advocate, and a producer. Thank you so much for joining us, Eliza.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
So I believe you found music really early. I'm going to try not to tell how much I know about your career because other people listening need to hear about it. But do you want to tell me about how you found music as a young person?
Yeah, so I was, as you said, very young, 5 years old. And I was walking down with my class in primary school, and the other class were doing a music class. And one of the students was supposed to go in the local Stedford, but decided that they would like to not go into it because of whatever reason. And so I put my hand up and said that I'd like to sing. And so I gave it a shot and was pretty shocked to have won a gold medal at the local Stedford, and thought, oh, well, maybe this is something that I can do. And it was actually quite meaningful because it was the exact age that I developed my disability as well. So I started falling over at school a lot and developed what I now know as Charcot-Marie-Tooth disorder. And I feel like music's always been that real, I guess in a way, like a best friend, somebody that, you know, or something rather, is that can kind of be there for me when I've needed it all through my life, really heavily through school though, because there were some really hard times. And I think just being able to go into the music room at any time and retreat there and write and sing felt really good.
Yeah, I can imagine that. You know, there are times at primary school where it feels like everyone is doing elastics or everyone is doing skipping, and it's really wonderful to have something else that you can do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So for you, it started off with singing and playing the piano?
Yes. Yeah. I started off, I think, singing, you know, first, obviously, and then I think mum put me into that, what's called Kids on Keyboard, I think it was called. And then I got lessons and, yeah, really started to fall in love with piano. But I have to be honest, I didn't really practice very much, and I didn't like doing the scales and learning kind of classical pieces. I really felt very early on like I want to actually write music, and I want to sing contemporary songs and play contemporary songs. So probably wish I had have tried a bit harder in the piano space, but now I guess I just use it to as a tool, really, just to sit and be able to sing and write songs.
So you started writing your own music really early.
So I think the first song maybe was about 12, 13, and that was by chance that we got given a piano by somebody that passed away, actually, a family friend, and they left the piano in the will to me. So it was lucky that it landed at my house, and I sat down, and I don't know if this is like 100% accurate, but I pretty much remember kind of sitting there and it coming pretty quickly, if not in the moment, like that day, where the first song kind of just came out of me. It was called Hello Goodbye, and it was like a, you know, song about love, really. And so, yeah, it was pretty quick that I went, okay, I love doing this. And I was really loving, you know, artists like Alicia Keys, who played the piano and sang, and Jewel, and those, you know, those singer-songwriters. That's where I was like, oh, this is where I belong.
Fantastic. And is that continued, that the music comes to you quite quickly, or do you now have a different process you need to work to find your songs?
Good question. I think, no, they come pretty quickly now. Like I think I've been really practicing hard about like at writing songs, and this particular record that I will release next year, I feel like I've worked really hard on this one. Not to say I haven't in the past, but I wanted to write a lot of songs. So we're at the stage right now where we've got 25, 30 songs, and then you cut them down to 10, which is really tricky, but actually quite a good problem to have. That was really, the songs kind of came in all different spaces, but I also gave myself 2 weeks where I went to London recently and it was a quite a big undertaking where I decided to write with a new person each day for 13 days in a row. And it was tiring, especially as somebody with a disability who was navigating a new city and trying to walk around and get up on the tube. And it was exhausting, but what I came out with was something I don't think I would have if I had have just stayed here. And they're really kind of grown the songwriting, but I think it showed me how possible it is to write really quickly. Like every day I was coming up with one, two songs with people. So yeah. And then often I would go home and write that night myself. So it, you know, it's, yeah, they're coming quite easily at the moment.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I think it is true that if you practice more, you get better at it, at writing quickly.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
I have to say, I saw something completely remarkable at one of your concerts. I've seen you play live a couple of times. I've seen you perform at the Sydney Opera House. And a couple of months ago, I saw you play in Darlinghurst in Sydney. And you did something I have never seen before. You improvised a song with your musicians.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe I did that.
It was amazing.
That's the first time I've ever done anything like it. I think I was just in a bit of a mood. It was the last show of the whole tour. We'd been touring for ages. And I was like, let's just do something really scary. And, yeah, it's funny because that song is now going to be on my next record. And, yeah, I finished that one in London. And it's I like it because all the rest are a bit more, I wouldn't say more produced, but more layered, whereas this one's like really kind of just raw. And I wanted to keep it that way because I kind of wanted it to feel like how it felt not the night I wrote it.
Yeah.
Which was writing all in front of you live.
It yeah. was so exciting. And I actually, for the listeners, Eliza actually sent me a demo of it and it's so beautiful. So when that album comes out next year, you have a real treat ahead of you.
Thank you.
So when did you put together your first album and start pushing your music out into the world?
Well, it started quite differently in that I left high school, started a rock band and played, you know, big venues they were big for me at the time, the SB, the Evelyn, kind of those big Melbourne iconic venues, and played loads of those. Then discovered electronic music, so Björk, Lamb, Moloko, those kind of 90s sounds I kind of started to discover looking back at that time. Even though it was past the 90s, I was kind of discovering them for the first time. And yeah, started to fall in love with electronic music. So then I joined, it was kind of like a group of, I guess, yeah, girls, women who wanted to, I guess they called it MC, that's what it was called. So rap or sing with DJs and with a style called drum and bass. So I would do the clubs at that point. So it went from rock to clubs and I would mainly freestyling. So as writing on the spot and people would be dancing and I'd be kind of singing and rapping music. And then I decided to make my first solo record in 2012. And that was like going, okay, I love more organic music and I love electronic music. So what if I kind of create a hybrid of that? And so I started writing. And the next record will be my sixth next year coming out and it'll be my second full length record. So this is, yeah, one that I'm really putting some effort into and, yeah, just trying to make the songs better than ever. That's really the aim.
Fantastic. You're also a writer and you're also a disability advocate. What came first, the disability advocacy or the writing, or did they come together?
I think the writing definitely came first because I was songwriting anyhow, and then I was writing poetry and filling my journals every day. And then I went on a trip. I was actually reflecting on this the other day. I went on a trip to Boston. There's a college there called Berklee School of Music, and I went there and worked and kind of learned some music over there. When I got back, I went for a job at ABC, and Stella Young was the great disability advocate, was the person that interviewed me for what was called RAMP, ramped up, I think, on ABC, which was like it was so cool. It was a disability space for writing on ABC. And I didn't get the job. And I was thinking, I look back on that and I was like, I wonder what I would have been like then to someone like Stella Young, who was so progressed in her identity as disabled. And for me, I'd never really used the word. I wish I could watch that interview because I would cringe at myself in a way, I guess, because, you know, being with royalty like Stella Young and not just being early on in my journey and hiding still and you know, probably even not wanting Stella to see the way I walked, and, you know, just hiding who I am and hiding my disability. But what Stella did was she said, you haven't got the job, but do you want to write an article? And so that was the first time I got that opportunity to write about my disability. And so it lives on the internet and it's interesting because it kind of says that being over at the School of Music in Berkeley, where I was being taught by some of the greatest songwriters in the world, I was afraid to get up and because they were wanting people to stamp their feet in 4/4 time and I couldn't do it. So it was kind of just about that. And so it was really the first chance I got to write. And then after that, I became a parent, or was wanting to become a parent rather, and faced discrimination from my neurologist about becoming a parent. And that's when I went to the ABC. And this was 2014. And put them to them an idea of a whole series on parenting with disability. And so that's really where my advocacy began. And it was a massive learning curve, but a lot of listening to others and just kind of noticing more and more how much discrimination people with disability face, but especially when we are parents, and especially when we have a disability that we can pass on. I noticed how much discrimination exists. And so that was my chance, I guess, to start the conversation about parenting with disability, start my advocacy journey, but then also write the book, We've Got This, about parenting with disability, and interview loads of parents in that space. So I guess in a way, it was a bit of both.
But when did We've Got This come out?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think maybe it was later. So it might have been more like 2018, actually.
Yeah.
And then the book came out after. I actually wanted it to be a book to begin with. That was always the plan, because I was searching for shelves of a book like that. I was like, where does that exist? How do I know what it's going to be like to be a parent with a disability? Like, you know, what if people see me out on the street? What if I drop my baby? What if all those questions go through your head? What if I pass my disability on, which, you know, I had a 50% chance of doing so? Would I feel guilty? All of those, you know, questions came to me, and I didn't have anyone to ask what that was like. Or so I really searched for something that existed, but it didn't. So that was like, okay, let's do the podcast first, and then we'll turn it into a book.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. I also understand that thing of going racing through your 20s, kind of paddling underwater massively to kind of live a life that you're telling yourself isn't affected by disability, when of course it radically, radically is. And then finding that acceptance when you go, oh, I just actually need to love this body and listen to this body and be in this body and acknowledge that this is where I live.
Yeah. I feel like I couldn't figure that out, whether it was an age thing, like whether it was hitting your 30s where you go, I don't have to hide anymore. Like, I don't have to sit when someone arrives. I can actually walk in front of them. Yeah, I can't figure out whether it was that I was growing into my body or that the world was shifting as well. Like, I think, I'm sure you've found this, that whilst we can see that there's so much discrimination still, and still people are still afraid of disability, that's for sure. That's 100%. But it's changing. Like, I feel like it's almost, I don't know, even, it's like embrace. Everyone just wants you to embrace yourself a bit more. The world is changing and attitudes are shifting and representation's helping.
So you're also a producer and you work on David Astell's evening program. How did you get into starting to like advocate, by bringing in other people and promote other artists. I also should say at this point, anyone who listens to this show regularly knows we end with a music sample. And I was confessing to Eliza today that she is the secret unknown associate producer of this podcast, because anything she recommends, I listen to. And so that's so often where music that I recommend comes from. But how did you get into starting to promote other artists? That was such a long-winded question. I apologize.
No, it's such a good question. I don't know, like, I can't really pinpoint how it began. I guess I just, I mean, I knew how hard it has been. And for me, I have to admit, like, it's only just started to get easier for my music. Like, I feel like I'm hitting some, you know, goals, like whatever that word is. Some of my dreams are coming true. And I think that that has been, it's been a long time. I've been working at it for 20 years. And along the way, I faced so much discrimination from people saying, don't walk in your music video, hide your legs, don't tell your booking agent because then he won't book you at festivals, or you can't do that venue because there's stairs and there's no, you know, you can't get up onto the stage, or just little things that you notice when you tell somebody that you've got a disability and you're sitting down and they have that face where they're like really sorry for you. So I guess just knowing how hard it has been at times, it's just inspired me to go, well, let's support others. And I love artists with disability. Like, that's no secret. Like, it's not like I'm doing it for, you know, I'm doing it to support and amplify, but I'm also doing it because I'm their fans. Like, some of the greatest artists have a disability. And I think there's just something about that, that it's like, it's a deeper thing. It's like they've had something that they've experienced that shows in their music. And I think that that's, yeah, just something I'm truly passionate about supporting. And so whenever I can, I will, do that, support other artists. And I have done that in all different ways, from reaching out to Double J and saying, it's International Day of People with Disability, I want to interview artists with disability from around the world. Or Triple J on Earth, why don't you do 5 artists with a disability this week? Or, you know, lots of things behind the scenes with organisations, or with David Astle spotlighting that, you know, that's all volunteer as well. Artists with disability, or people might come to me and say, it's International Day of People with Disability, do you have a spreadsheet of musicians, and I'll send it off. So, like, a lot of just that stuff that makes me, it's purposeful, because it kind of taking something that I have the ability to do and supporting others in rising up, really. And I want to make it an easier industry for them. And it hasn't always worked. There's still so much to change. Like, even the organizations that have stepped in and do want to learn, they still don't change. Yeah. They change for a bit and then they don't. They still don't have ramps up onto stages. They have an awards night and then they don't even have a ramp up there. That, you know, that all the things. And it can feel hurtful at times, but I think I just kind of keep going and go, okay, this is what needs to still shift. And I guess it just feels, yeah, like something I can do to support others.
That's awesome. Tell me a little bit about your music video with Roya the Destroyer.
Yeah, that was really beautiful. So I met her through mutual friends. She took the song that I really had a very basic recording of Running Underwater, where I think it was just me out in my studio singing it with my piano. I sent it to her to have a listen. Next minute, she's busking in Melbourne on the streets and sending me a video of it. And I was like, oh, like, that is incredible. And I was just like, we've got to do that, like, on a clip. So when I actually got the chance to record the song properly, we got a tiny bit of funding to use a space here in Castlemaine, which was called the Good Shed, which is like an old, it's kind of like an old mill, woolen mill, big warehouse space. And so I got an incredible cinema photographer that I love, Kieran Watson Bonas, and Roya, yeah, came up. We choreographed it together and then we did it, and it was pretty much half, like, a couple of hours, and she just completely nailed it. And yeah, it kind of you know, it has changed my life in so many ways. And I got a real kick when I saw it on Rage, because I've never seen disability like that on Rage. But the biggest, this is going to sound really funny, but one of the biggest things was when one of my idols, Daniel Johns from Silverchair, he shared it. And for me, that was like, how do I say this? It's like when somebody of that caliber who has been in the industry for a long time, who was an artist that has been edgy and brilliant, shares a disabled body with a disabled artist singing that, yeah, really, I screamed. I was like, oh, like it was just like, yeah, it felt like a real milestone.
That's awesome. Running underwater, it also starts with you walking really simply to the piano and sitting down. So you are absolutely coming out with that walk that you talked about hiding in your 20s.
Yeah, that was a last minute suggestion of me, because I thought, like, I was fine to not be in it in a way. Like, that was kind of the initial idea. I wouldn't be in it. But I kind of thought, well, it gives context as to why I would sing this song. If I walk out there, it was the greatest fear to walk in front of the camera because of being told for so long not to. And it also connected me to Roya. And then at the end of the clip, she joins me at the piano. And I think it's a way of saying, well, our differences are huge in the way that we experience our bodies. Roya has one leg. I have a neurological condition, so that affects my whole body in the way that I feel, the ability to regulate my temperature, the way I walk, my feet, everything, my hands. But whilst we have different disabilities, I'm actually almost pointing to Roya like she's here. whilst we have different disabilities, we have so much in common because of our disabilities. Like, it's, I think that's what you find with the disability community, and is like, oh, you get it. You actually get it. Whether you have this kind of disability or this kind of disability, it doesn't matter, because you have a common ground, and it's so beautiful to feel that.
Yeah. Hey, full circle moment. The last new song I heard from you was a Daniel Johns cover. You've covered one of Silverchair's songs for the new series, Playing Gracie Darling.
Yes, that's right. It's a big moment. I got asked to put a submission in for it, and they, loved it, which was great. It was like a lot of work to get the song to the level I needed it to get to, but with the help of people like Pip Norman, and who produced it, and another producer, James McGuffey, and then I got a great strings composer who writes for a lot of TV and film. His name's Eki Valden, I think is how you pronounce his last name. Yeah, it was so cool to reimagine a song that was the first ever CD I got, Frog Stomp. It was actually, I think I got it later than it came out, but I'll never forget it, that I put it on, and it was so angsty and alive. And at the time, I probably didn't really know what the lyrics were about. It just felt like it was saying something, It was making me feel something. And now reimagining it, I realized that really a lot of the lyrics are about greed, about rich people not sharing money with people that need it. And I was kind of like, oh, this is actually a song that probably needs to be sung more than ever. And so the version that I'm going to be putting out, the trailer's come out with my song in it, but I'm going to put the full version out in July 25. So you'll probably be here, probably would be out by now.
Awesome.
And I'm excited by it, because I've kind of flipped it on its head a little. Like, really, it's not an angsty teenage anthem anymore. It's a ethereal, down tempo, at times dramatic when the strings and drums come in at the end, but totally different take on the song.
We'll make sure we share a link to that. And you've got a new album coming out next year, so many things to look forward to. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Eliza.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're on 2RPH and this is Sideshow. Hey, welcome back, Liz Cooper. Thank you for joining us. What are you seeing and not seeing this month?
Hi, Anthea. Thank you for having me. So what I am seeing this month is several shows from the Limitless program as part of the Sydney Fringe Festival. So this year, Limitless will have its hub at the Bondi Pavilion and will run from the 16th to the 20th of September. Now, I've already booked a few shows, including Ellie Mae Barnes, Dean Don't Dance, and Crippo Night. But the program is absolutely jam-packed with theatre, cabaret, comedy, and dance acts. And so I've kind of made a little wish list of other awesome acts that I want to book. So I'm looking forward to doing that in the next week or so. So I will have a full week of Limitless in my calendar. I go to shows from the Limitless program every year, and I really, really love this program. And this year, again, there's just so many great acts in the program that I think the best thing to do for people is to jump on the website and see what takes their fancy. The program runs from the 16th to the 20th of September at Bondi Pavilion in Bondi.
Awesome. I'm really looking forward to it too. In fact, Ellie Mae Barnes is going to join us on the show next month, and I can't wait to chat to her.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting.
So what is it that you're not able to see this month?
Well, what I'm not able to see is the Undercover Artist Festival happening in Brisbane in September from the 22nd to the 27th. Now, what's so special about the Undercover Artist Festival is that it's led by deaf, disabled and neurodivergent artists. And so it's not just about representation, but about DDN artists pushing creative boundaries and expanding the landscape of the performing arts. Some of the standout acts this year include Wonder Sounds, there's a comedy club night, the theatre piece Wired Differently, and the incredible The Sisters of Invention. So look on the website of the Undercover Artist Festival for more details. And again, it's running from the 22nd to the 27th of September in Brisbane.
Awesome. And for any listeners who missed it, Madeline Little did a show for us a couple of months back when their program was announced. And I highly suggest you get back to that. You can listen to that through the show on the podcast. Hey, thanks so much for joining me, Liz, and for those recommendations.
Thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to chatting again next month.
As promised, to take us out, here is Eliza Hull with Tomorrow. Swear.